Before we begin our regular proceedings today, we have two motions. I'll turn it over to Judge Chen for motion.
Yes, thank you, Chief. This morning I'd like to move the admission of Timothy Q. Lee, who is a member of the bar and is in good standing with the highest court of New York. I have knowledge of his credentials and am satisfied that he possesses the necessary qualifications. I know these things because Mr. Lee has been one of my clerks for the past 18 months. And, you know, most clerks come through for 1 year. Tim has managed to stay with me for a whole year and a half, and that can be, I understand, a withering, relentless experience. But Tim has really held up well. He's been an excellent clerk for me, very thoughtful, great writer, commonly has been doing bench memos of 50 pages or more, and yet I always ask for more. But he also has other great qualities. I just know him as an honorable, kind person with a lot of dignity and poise, and I think he's going to be a great member of our bar. So I respectfully move for Mr. Lee's admission to our bar.
Well, we have the pleasure around our court because we're all on two floors of getting to know each other's clerks as well. So it's with pleasure that I grant the motion. And now I will, if you will allow me, I will entertain a motion.
Oh, well, did we grant my motion?
Yes. Oh. Wait, I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're taking hostages here today, I see.
Oh, gosh, back in Congress.
Okay. I move the admission of Vincent Young Ling, who is a member of the bar and is in good standing in the highest court of New York and Massachusetts. I have knowledge of his credentials and am satisfied that he possesses the necessary qualifications. And I think Judge Chen and Judge Hughes will appreciate that ours is kind of an odd job because in normal work settings, you hire someone, they work out great for a year, and what that means is that you keep them forever. And in our situation, in our circumstance, we have the pleasure and the honor of working so closely with our clerks for a year, and then they go on to do other things. So it's kind of a weird position we're in. It's a very bittersweet circumstance we find ourselves in because we do hold on to them forever in a different way, which is they become a member of the clerk family and also the court family. Vinny has been with our chambers for a year. He came to me well-trained by first Judge Sue Robinson and then Judge Kent Jordan. And in an odd moment this morning, I just told Vinny that my phone rang and I hadn't talked to Kent Jordan in almost a year. And he was calling on another matter, but we both concluded it was telepathy that he was calling on this morning. Mm-hmm. So on behalf of myself and Judge Jordan wishes you congratulations. Vinny's been a pleasure in the chambers. He's a thoughtful and measured professional young man. He's been unique as a member in certain respects because his mature judgment causes him constantly to think several steps ahead of where we are at the moment in terms of the consequences of what we do. I'll have to admit that sometimes drives me crazy, but it's been a pleasure and a challenge to have him do that in chambers. He's clearly destined to do consequential things in his personal and professional life. And in his personal life, that includes moving his wife across country to join a firm in L.A. and hopefully to finally be getting at least one dog. So it's been a great pleasure, and I move the admission of this talented young man.
Motion is granted.
Thank you. Will you both stand, please?
You solemnly swear that you will comport yourself as an attorney and counselor of this court, uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
I do.
Congratulations. Welcome to the bar.
Congratulations. Okay, first case for argument this morning is 16-1962, Otsuka Pharmaceutical versus Zydus Pharmaceutical. Mr. Browning, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. Paul Browning for Plaintiff Appellant Otsuka. The district court below construed the claim terms from the perspective of a layperson, not one of ordinary skill in the art. And having construed the claim terms in this fashion, the district court disregarded those portions of the specification that he believed did not comport with his lay reading of the claims.
Well, you say disregarded. That's kind of a harsh word, it seems. He considered all of the sites in the specification that you were arguing went the other way or should cause him to go the other way, and he dealt with them, right? So
well,
he did consider.
I certainly mean no disrespect for Judge Simandl, but with all due respect, I don't believe he took into account those other portions of the specification. He certainly did not show how they aligned in any way with his construction of the claims. Now, this court in Phillips said the specification is the single best guide to the meaning of the claim terms. The judge below did not use the specification as the single best guide. He didn't
well, you say that it, those provisions that you cite, and I think we're aware of them in my mind, at least two come to mind, and you say they didn't align with his construction. But what he said is in those same paragraphs or the same sections of the specification, clearly you talked about the composition using the words in the claim, and you talked about using one single dosage. So he dealt with that, and he... And so why is he wrong in that? He said those sections, those alternative uses that are cited in the spec don't undermine the conclusion that the words in the spec refer to the first portion of those the specification and not the second.
Well, the problem, well, there are multiple problems with that, but the problem is that those portions of the specification are talking about composition, the broad term composition. It makes clear that composition has alternative forms. It can be in one dosage form or it can be in two. And the specification is very clear in language, and it uses the term dosage form, which the district court below erroneously equated with composition, differently and distinctly. If you look through the specification, it only uses dosage form in very few places. Every single time it does, it says that there are alternative approaches. One is a single dosage form. Another is multiple dosage form.
Well, so let's take a step back. I mean, this is a pretty long patent, but in so many different places throughout the patent, we're talking about the combination of the two ingredients in a single pharmaceutically acceptable carrier, right? A single carrier.
That language is used, correct.
So, I mean, it's like a jackhammer to my forehead. So the point is that it's very consistent with what I think everyone's common sense background understanding of what a composition would be, which is essentially a chemical or physical union into a single thing of multiple elements or ingredients. Like, for example, if I had two cups here on the bench and one was a cup of lemonade and the other was a cup of iced tea, I don't think the Supreme Court would be very surprised if I told them that that was a composition of an Arnold Palmer, because we're talking about two separate cups of iced tea and lemonade, respectively.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but we're not talking about iced tea. We're talking about pharmaceutical compositions.
Right, but as far as I know, there's nothing in the record that suggests that a common background understanding of the word composition in chemistry is so broad that it encompasses two separate dosage forms.
Well, now
the next step is, okay, is there something in your spec that is clear or clear enough that displaces that common background understanding of the word composition?
Right, Your Honor, but with all due respect, I believe that's not the correct approach, and that we don't look to common sense lay interpretations of composition. We look to how one of skill in the art in the context of this patent specification would understand that term.
But to be clear, you're not arguing that outside the context of this patent, a skilled artisan would understand a composition or the composition to, as a matter of course, be one or more dosages.
Well,
you're looking to the specification of the patent.
Not quite, Your Honor. I mean, we are looking, of course, to the specification.
Did you provide any expert testimony or anything that would suggest a skilled artisan would understand in this pharmaceutical industry a composition or the composition to be two or more dosages combined?
Yeah, and to be clear, it's pharmaceutical composition is the term, and the testimony undisputed by both sides' experts were that combination therapy is the norm.
I'm sorry, that's not answering my question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm trying to be very specific, because I understand your argument is based on the specification, and also particularly that in this field, combination therapy is used. But I don't see any evidence that in isolation, a skilled artisan in the pharmaceutical industry would understand a composition or the composition to be anything other than a singular dose.
Yeah, again, Your Honor, we have to construe the claim term.
Could you just answer his question, please? Is there anything in the record?
I'm sorry. All right, I'll answer backwards then. Your Honor, Dr. Krell, who's our expert, did offer his opinion that one of ordinary skill in the art would understand pharmaceutical composition as a broad term, that it doesn't specify the dosage form. And then in the context of the claims and the specification,
Where did he say that?
In his declaration, which is in the appendix.
But did he actually say it's a broad term that can actually encompass two separate dosage forms, can represent a composition?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
He said that it just means there's more than one part, and it's very broad. He said it's very broad language. I'm quoting from his deposition.
That's great. Where is that in the
cheat sheet, Your Honor? If you look at Appendix 6352,
is that Volume 3? It is.
I'm sorry, 6357. And it's page 157. He says, that's the nature of a composition. Composition means more than one part. And then he compares it to musical composition. There's more than one part, although you call it a whole thing. It's a definition of something that has subparts. So he's saying it's very broad language. And again, this is, we're talking about a pharmaceutical composition, and the claim is directed to a combination of two active ingredients. The judge, district court judge, found the undisputed reality is that when one in the skill in the art is practicing that type of technology, it's always in two different dosage forms. And this concept is repeated not only in the specification, it's also repeated in the prosecution history, that Otsuka repeatedly pointed to example 9. There's no dispute that was two different dosage forms, as being representative of the scope of the claims. Otsuka also submitted the Hirose Declaration. Again, two different dosages were tested, and Dr. Hirose said this is representative of showing the unexpected results of the claimed invention.
I guess what was a little murky for me with the prosecution history was that the Hirose Declaration and all didn't really tightly associate his observations with the actual claim term composition. I understand that maybe one could argue that he was implicitly somehow injecting some meaning into the word composition by talking about these different dosage forms and things like that and how you need a certain effective level of each ingredient. But in the end, he doesn't actually come through and say, this is what we mean by the word composition. And in fact, we know the examiner didn't believe that because the examiner got on record and said he understood or she understood the word composition to imply that everything is in a single carrier, single vehicle.
Well, Your Honor, I disagree. In that, first of all, Dr. Hirose said, I'm quoting from his declaration, that it was in order to show the unexpectedly superior effects of the present invention. So yes, he didn't use the word composition, but he's pointing to the claim of invention before the office at the time. Moreover, despite, you know, I think that what the patent examiner said, I think is a little ambiguous. However, what's important.
I don't understand how that proves your point, because the claimed invention could still have unexpected results if it's combined in one dosage.
Correct, but here he is submitting specific data where it's in two different dosage forms. And he doesn't say, well, this isn't the invention, but maybe it'll help show it's unexpected results. He says this is showing unexpected results of the present invention. I think that's very clear language. And what's important is the patent office, no matter what it may have said at one snippet of the prosecution history, allowed the claims. And in the patent examiner's reason for allowance, one piece of evidence she points to is the Hirose Declaration. And again, this point is repeated. It's not just the Hirose Declaration, but it's example 9, which the applicant points to as showing the unexpected results of the invention. And again, example 9, there's no dispute. It's two different liquid formulations of the two different components, and they're administered to the mouse.
Can I take you back to the specification? Because
yes.
I think this case is hard, and there are definitely different
portions that support each side, but every time you cite things that support, I think in your view, your side, it uses different words than composition to describe multi-dosage forms. It either uses preparations or things like that as an alternative. It doesn't use in the same sentence, although it does in the same paragraph, I agree. How do we read that? It seems right to me that we could read it either way, that here's the composition form. The composition form is one tablet, but you can do it in two preparations or in two dosage forms, and that's somehow different than the composition.
Right. I think you raise a very important point, is the patent uses the terms composition and preparation differently because they're different terms. Right.
I understand you want that to cut in your favor, but I suspect your friend is going to say it cuts against you, because if you admit composition to cover those different terms, you would have included it as a description of a composition rather than as an alternative.
Well, I don't, Your Honor, if you're referring to the portion at column 3, it says there are two alternatives for the claim or inventive composition. It says one, they can be in a single preparation, or two, they can be in two preparations. The whole paragraph is talking about the compositions. It begins with talking about the compositions. It may be this way. And then it ends with saying how the compositions can then be administered to treat a mood disorder. So the whole paragraph is talking about compositions. It's not disclosing alternatives or an alternative to the claimed composition. And I think that the district court just simply misread that.
But we get to, I think, obviously, column 3 is your best piece of evidence.
Well,
you get to column 14, lines roughly 10 through 20, and, you know, it looks a little bit different. You know, you have in one embodiment, they can be in one pharmaceutical composition. On the other hand, they can be in a pharmaceutical preparation, individually in a pharmaceutical preparation respectively, and each one of these preparations, not compositions, may be administered at the same time.
Right. But, Your Honor, when the composition is administered, both components at once, you're administering the composition. If I am administering the composition in different dosage forms, you might explain that, well, it's in different preparations that I'm administering the composition. So this portion of the specification is really getting at the breadth of the administration forms. And one administration form is sure is the composition is a combined dosage form. And it describes that as a composition, which is entirely accurate. Maybe it could have been written differently, but I think it's an entirely accurate representation of the language.
When it was talking about administration forms, could that really be like administering something orally, administering something intravenously,
yes,
suppository? And so therefore, that's the different types of administration forms that particular portion of the specification is referring to, and not necessarily referring to breaking up the composition into two compositions and calling two compositions a single composition.
Well, again, the patent specification doesn't use the compositions the way you are, Your Honor, with all due respect. And the language is that it can be of any type. So it's delivered to the body in vivo at the same time.
Right. I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out is following up is what does it mean to be any type, and why isn't that phrase referencing the different types of ways you can administer the drug, i.e. administer it orally and administer it intravenously. And so that is what any type is referencing, not how you can, you know, reorganize all the elements of the composition into like one thing or two separate things.
Well, again, with respect, I disagree, and that's exactly what the ROSA declaration does, is it takes the two components of the composition.
I'm just trying to understand the meaning of the phrase any type in column 14, and why is my proposed interpretation of any type necessarily wrong, and why is, I guess, your interpretation of any type necessarily right?
Well, it's very broad language, Your Honor. It doesn't say anywhere that the two components of the composition have to be in a single dosage form. That language isn't there. If the only time that language appears, it's always conjoined with the alternative. Every single time.
Yeah, so, but then single dosage form is always also conjoined with the word composition. And I don't quite see multiple dosage forms, that phrasing necessarily conjoined with the word composition.
Well, actually, that occurs at least in column 3 of the patent. It says the whole paragraph is talking about pharmaceutical compositions of the invention. It begins by talking about them. It says they may be in one dosage form. Alternatively, they may be in separate. And then it says these compositions can be used to treat mood disorder. That whole paragraph is talking about the pharmaceutical compositions of the invention. That's the broad language that's throughout here. And, you know, this appears throughout the specification. There's also the description of the different dosage combinations that can be used. And if you limit this to a single dosage form, you can't practice big swaths of the specification because the two different drugs are given on different dosage schedules. And therefore, composition was used very broadly here by the patentees, and they're very clear about it. They said it repeatedly throughout the specification. They said it in the prosecution history. And again, it was the undisputed reality, as found by the district court judge, that this is how one of skill in the art would understand this type of technology. I'd also like to point out, I'm not the only person who's interpreting the patent specification this way. Their own expert interpreted the exact same way we did and testified that way at the Markman hearing. And I have a citation for that if you'd like. Everybody agreed that those portions of the specification were talking about a composition that can be administered in two different dosage forms. The only question was whether that portion of the specification should be looked at interpreting the claims. The district court said, no, I want to go with my lay reading of the claims, and I'm going to not accept portions that don't comport with that. That was legal error under this court's precedence. Under this court's precedence, the district court should have started with a specification and read the language in that context, and also in the context of one of ordinary skill in the art. And again, it was undisputed that those of skill in the art who understand combination therapy know that the two drugs are administered separately so that they can be titrated separately, which is very important.
If you really meant combination theory, why didn't you use that in your claim language?
Well, combination is used in the claim. So it's, and there are methods where the combination is administered. So yeah, combination therapy, those words per se aren't used, but similar words are used. And certainly that's one how one of skill in the art would read it. There's no dispute on that as well.
I mean, that you said that the district court didn't reference columns 3 or columns 14. He block quoted them right in here.
And then
explained why, in his view, they weren't persuasive. So I guess I'm a little bit bothered when you say he didn't consider it or refused to consider it. He did consider it, and you did evaluate it. He just ended up coming out the other way than you would want.
Well,
so I don't know why you're saying that he ignored it or refused to consider it.
He did not show how it was how his claim construction could be reconciled with the full scope of the specification. That's what he didn't do. Yes, he did cite to those portions of the specification.
He quoted them.
Right.
He evaluated them.
Right, but again...
Okay, so he didn't ignore them, and he didn't refuse to consider them.
Correct.
Okay.
But he did not... Correct, Your Honor. Maybe my language was not quite precise. But he did not take them into account in the claim construction. And again, he said that he was not going to accept portions of the specification that didn't comport with his reading of the claims, which was based on the singular structure of composition and the structure of the claims.
I don't know why you keep saying that. He's looking at all the intrinsic evidence, including block quoting the ones that, in your view, favor you.
Correct, Your Honor. Again, I don't mean to suggest that he didn't view the evidence. He certainly viewed the evidence. My point is he should have used the specification as a guide. He shouldn't have come to a conclusion about what the claim construction meant and then go back to the specification and pick and choose which portions he'd like to rely on. That is, with all due respect to the district judge, is not correct.
And I think we've exceeded our time. Yes. We'll restore 3 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Lawrence Sung, representing Torrent Pharmaceuticals and also speaking on behalf of the 10 defendants' appellees. I think that you've seized on the infirmity with Otsuka's position here. Essentially, it is using a number of statements in the prosecution history as well as the rest of the intrinsic evidence in the specification, indeed the claims, where it's comparing apples and oranges. I think that the reference to the term a pharmaceutical composition has been used as a matter of expediency to truncate the entire limitation within that claim, which not only talks about a pharmaceutical composition, but one that is comprised of two ingredients referred to in certain portions.
I understand that, but in the two provisions of the specification that we've been talking about today, your friend, I think he argues, and it has some at least facial appeal, when you're talking about, you've got one paragraph and you're talking about this present invention, and then you use the introductory words alternatively around the other hand. So why shouldn't the words that follow alternatively on the other hand also be used to inform what the present invention consists of?
Well, I think that those paragraphs that Otsuka is referring to do give the dichotomy that is in the disclosure between a single dosage form and a dosage form with more than one component. But if we go into the specifics of what's stated within those three portions, because I think we're all focused on the same exact statements within the specification, if you read through them, you will see that it's not simply talking about a pharmaceutical composition by way of dosage form. It actually uses the terminology when it refers to a single dosage form of the two components in combination with each other.
Well, can you just, you know, instead of talking generality, go straight to column three?
Okay. So with column three, it states the novel compositions of the present invention comprising at least one carbosterol derivative with activity as a dopamine serotonin system stabilizer and at least one serotonin reuptake inhibitor in a pharmaceutically accepted carrier may be combined in one dosage form. With that particular statement, the district court looked at the use of the term in a pharmaceutically accepted carrier and in a single dosage form to mean the same thing for that purpose. Then it continues to say alternatively the at least and the same components and maybe in separate dosage forms in each in a pharmaceutically accepted carrier. That's column three.
Right.
There are two other references in example six and example
But then there's
eight.
The next sentence. Could you read the next sentence?
I'm afraid I don't have that.
Oh, that's an important sentence.
It says these compositions are administered to a patient with a mood disorder, blah, 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 in amount and dosage regimen effective to treat the mood disorder.
And so why isn't that a sum-up sentence referring to the two alternatives of said composition?
I'm not here arguing that the specification fails to disclose two alternatives, but it's not enough.
No, but the question is really why isn't this reference to these compositions a signal to all of us of what the patent drafter meant by the word compositions in light of the indication here that this sentence, these composition sentence, is a sum-up sentence of what has come before in the paragraph. Why isn't it an understanding of the word composition?
Because the alternatives as they are defined provide a single dosage form where that composition consists of the two ingredients in combination with one another, as opposed to one in which they are separate. The claim language refers only to the first, which is a composition with the two components in combination.
But I guess your argument wants me to read this sentence that begins with these compositions as referring only to one of the two alternatives in the prior two sentences, and you want me to ignore the other sentence that precedes the these compositions, and I need to know why.
And I don't believe that they're exclusive. I do think that the compositions, as that paragraph refers to it, talks very broadly about having one embodiment with a single dosage form and a second embodiment with multiple dosage forms.
Wait, is your argument that we should be keying on the word combination rather than composition because the first sentence describes them in combination, the second sentence doesn't? So you can have a composition that contains both forms, but is not in combination. And all the relevant claims use the word combination.
Yes, and that is uniform
throughout.
Is that
what the district court found, though?
It is, because the district court
looked at the same... I thought the district court found that composition was using the word a or the before it was singular and didn't so much key on combination.
No, you're correct, Judge Hughes, that the district court did go through the syntax issue as well. But the district court did go through each of these descriptions about the alternative embodiments and reach the conclusion I'm describing, which is essentially the claim language says composition, pharmaceutical composition, having those two components in combination with each other. That's the full description.
But so that argument seems a little odd to me. I mean, I get your argument that A or the composition seems to have a singular meaning, but if you're giving that up and saying composition based upon this language in column three can have multiple dosage forms, it's just not the kind of composition used in the claims. Now you're asking us to read the word combination in a way that seems out of the ordinary.
And I'm not
why sure. Wouldn't it be a combination even if it's in two different dosage forms?
Because that's not the way the patent describes it. Again, every instance in the specification where the use of the term a pharmaceutical composition or a dosage form that has those two ingredients in combination with one another refers only to a single dosage form. That is the way the claims recite it as well. In each instance at the specification where there is a reference to multiple dosage forms, the combination or the use of the word combined is never used in that same way. And the district court so found that those three statements in the specification are the ones that most naturally align with the claim language.
Can I just follow up? I think I understand your theory about in combination with and composition. And when you use all those terms together, we're talking exclusively and only about a single dosage form. But just to make sure I understand your answer to Judge Hughes, is it your view that the word composition, as it's used over and over again through this patent, is actually an umbrella term that by itself, the word composition encompasses both single dosage forms and separate dosage forms, but when the word composition is used together in the patent with the phrase in combination with, then we are channeled and necessarily must understand all those terms together as being just for the single dosage form?
I believe
so. Really, the key of that very long question was, do you think the word composition in this patent encompasses multiple dosage forms?
I think that's a hypothetical, Judge Chen. To answer your question directly, the way you've articulated it is the theory behind the district court's claim construction as well as the defendant's. What I will say to you is that you can't divorce pharmaceutical composition from the remaining part of that claim language, which ties that pharmaceutical composition to having two components in combination with each other. So to say, are we advocating that composition is a broader term? It's hard to do that because that's not what the claims say. But if you are to analyze that and say, it had the claims only referred to a pharmaceutical composition without anything else, I think the possibility is true that there may be multiple dosage forms that could be included within that definition. It's just not recited that
way. But every time in the claim language, when it uses composition, in your view, it also uses the word combination.
It does. Every claim. And so if you trace that language back to the specification to say where in the specification do they talk about a composition with those ingredients in combination with each other, you come to this dichotomy where it says on the one hand you can have a single dosage form with that exact language, and on the other hand you can have individually packaged drugs.
I thought the patent also describes examples talking about a combination of the different ingredients and the combination of, but the administration of that combination is separate. The two ingredients are being separately administered. And so therefore, the whole notion of what is in combination with mean encompasses separate administration of the two drugs.
Well, there are two points to that. Let me address the first point to that, Judge Chen. In those particular examples, there is no direct reference to a pharmaceutical composition or even a dosage form. It simply are the administration of two separate drugs at two different times. And so it talks about a differential administration. They're not administered at the same time. But those examples aren't talking about a formulation or a dosage form or a composition. They're talking about how the results of combining two drugs together can perhaps provide data that shows unexpected results. That's used to support the patentability of this invention, but it doesn't speak to dosage forms the way that Otsuka would have you look at it. And the fact that multiple dosage forms or the co-administration or joint administration is disclosed in the specification isn't enough to actually reach the point of construing the claims appropriately. They have to have that those ingredients in combination with one another.
Can I? I'm a little confused by that. I guess you, okay. This argument has taken me back a little. On page 3, where you talk about the statement, the issues, it seems like the two issues that you describe have pretty much only to do with defining the scope of pharmaceutical composition, either as including a single dosage or not. It doesn't quite deal with what you proposed here, which seems to me a bit of a different formulation of the issues, which is the pharmaceutical composition in combination and then followed by the combination language. Am I missing something here?
It is not my intent, and there's no departure from our position that we are here to construe the term a pharmaceutical composition. I'm just offering that there are words that follow that in every one of the claims that says and helps define what that pharmaceutical composition as that term is used in the claims. The patent itself may use the term composition, preparation. As Judge Hughes mentioned, there are lots of different words that are there. The district court actually found that none of those other statements were particularly helpful because there are multiple reasons that those statements could have been offered. So it's really the distinction between a single dosage form and a multiple dosage form that forms the crux of how the definition proceeds from that. That flows also through Claim 18 and the claim language there, where it talks about ingredients that are involved. These are ingredients contained in a single composition. The prosecution history reveals that the examiner viewed this as drugs that would be put together in a single vehicle and makes very clear that her interpretation of the claims was that pharmaceutical composition related only to a single dosage form. The rebuttal that Otsuka offers for that, again, goes to issues with respect to whether the data that it supplied in the Hirose Declaration showed that there was a synergistic effect. It was not about dosage forms. It was not about routes of administration. That's why it said in the declaration that it's in many respects agnostic to the route of administration because that wasn't what the data was there to show. Now, with respect to the experts, because that portion was referred to by Otsuka as well. The experts were not in a concert with regard to what they were stating about a pharmaceutical composition. Again, the focus in their depositions and their declarations was on the term pharmaceutical composition stripped away from everything else within the claim that we've now put forward. And in that instance, the experts stated, well, the word composition can mean lots of different things, things that include a lot more than just one single dosage form. But again, I think that misses the mark. The mark here is what does the patent really say about pharmaceutical composition comprising A and B in combination with each other?
Thank you.
There are a few points I'd like to make. We had a lot of discussion of combination, and Judge Chen clearly better reads very carefully. We point to the examples, particularly example 6, begins by saying a combination of aripiprazole and at least one serotonin reuptake inhibitor, and then describes that that combination can be in separate dosage forms or single dosage forms. So I know your honors are familiar with that from the specification. But I'd also like to point out this also appears in the prosecution history. I'll quote for you, that there's a discussion of the tail suspension test. That's example 9. And there's no dispute that the two components of the composition are administered separately. What the patentee said about that was, quote, this is one example, or quote, one example employing a combination of agents within the scope of the claims. That appears in Appendix 4940. Couldn't be clearer that the claims encompass separate dosage forms. Moreover, the Perosi Declaration itself said it is further evidence of the enablement of the claimed invention. The Perosi Declaration, also said that the combination of the present invention clearly shortened the immobility time. So he's pointing his results as a combination of the claimed invention. So again, combination doesn't take us away from the construction of pharmaceutical composition. It still is a broad term. I'd also like to point out Judge Hughes asked me earlier about evidence of how one of skill in the art would understand composition, and I pointed to Dr. Krell's testimony. I neglected to point to the Wong reference. The Wong reference was the primary reference cited during the prosecution history. That reference uses pharmaceutical composition, or I believe it says composition, the exact same way as the patentee here. And that composition encompasses two different...
Is that true? I thought the Wong claims actually specifically call out that composition will be either in a single carrier or multiple carriers.
Right. If you look at
the... So that's not quite the same as your claim, which doesn't explicitly encompass the term composition to encompass multiple carriers.
Well, to be clear, the Wong reference has a section of the specification that's very similar to the specification 350 patent. Moreover, it does have a claim, like you mentioned, that's a dependent claim. So the Wong reference is using the term composition broadly the same way we did. And again, we think that's evidence of how one of ordinary skill in the art would broadly understand composition, particularly in this context. Remember, we have to look at this context, which is combination therapy. I'd also like to point out there was another question earlier. I apologize, it may have been from you, Judge Chen, about how one would read the part of the specification at column 14 about administration forms the invention. I'd like to point out that defendant's expert reads that the same way we do. And this appears at the appendix at page 2104 through 2105. And you can see, starting at 2104, that we're asking about this portion of column 14. And the question is, so this passage means the administration forms of the pharmaceutical composition of the present invention can be any type where aripiprazole and an SRI are in the body at the same time. Answer, yes. Follow-up, and this passage indicates that the aripiprazole and the SRI may be in separate dosage forms. Answer, yes. So again, this was the undisputed reality for this court. This was Dr. Harper, defendant's own expert, reads the specification the exact same way.
What's the JA site?
It's 2105 are the portions that I read, but you'd want to also look at 2104 to know what portion of the patent document is being talked about. It's column 14. So again, it's not just us reading the patent that way. It's the experts before the district court. And again, the
that's intrinsic evidence, though, right? Isn't that a de novo question for us to understand and interpret the specification?
Well, correct. I believe that most of your analysis is de novo. However, there were factual findings by the district court that this court views for clearer. Those factual findings were uniformly in our favor as to how one of ordinary skill in the art understands this technology. And that's, of course, supported throughout the appendix. One final
very short final point. No, I don't, but we've exceeded your time.
Okay. I just like to say that 6 of the 9 examples are consistent with our construction of the claims, and certainly that's very compelling evidence to support our concern. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We thank both sides. The case is submitted.